today as we come to the table.
I can tell you, not only does God want us to see how we're going to respond, but he wants us to know the world around us is watching us. And that's the greatest thing that puts the heaviest weight on me, especially as a pastor. People watch pastors more closely. I'm made of the same stuff you guys are. And so when I see my failures, when the heat comes in, and I realize, God, people are watching me, this is a refining process. It causes me to run to God in desperation and say, not for my sake. I can be humiliated. One day I'll die. But for your name's sake, please let me handle this right. For your name's sake. Because what are people going to say about you because of how I respond?
In today's message, Pastor Mark describes how God not only uses trials to reveal how you'll respond, but also to show you the world is observing your life as a believer. That awareness brings a heavy responsibility, especially when failures happen, because others will see how you respond under pressure. Well, thanks for taking the time to join us as we come to the table, the daily Bible study program of Mark Kirk, Senior Pastor of Calvary Knoxville. Knowing that people are watching your responses should drive you to cry out, not for your own sake, but for God's name's sake. Your response should honor Him and represent who He is. You can be willing to face personal humiliation, but ask God to help you handle things so that people see Him clearly through you. Now let's join Pastor Mark in the book of Judges, chapter 7, with today's edition of Come to the Table.
What God is saying is that oftentimes it's the hidden strife or the hidden inner turmoil in our life that God uses in the greatest ways to teach us. God uses that. Maybe you've got some inner turmoil, some inner strife. Maybe you've got some external turmoil, an external strife. What God is saying here to the nation of Israel, and I think what God is teaching us, is that God will use even that strife that we have in our heart, even that turmoil we have, to bring us to the hill of teaching. That is to bring us oftentimes to a place where we wouldn't listen any other way. I know, especially before I gave my life to the Lord, until God brought strife into my life, I wouldn't listen. I had my own plan, my own agenda. But when God brought strife in, he got my attention. You know, David said this in the Psalms. He said, you know, before the Lord chastised me, or before I was afflicted, he said, I went astray. He said, but after I was afflicted, I honored the Lord. Now, those are my own words, but in essence, what David was saying. Here's the principle. God is allowing strife, difficulty, because he's using it to bring you to the hill of teaching. He wants you at Moray. He wants you at that place where you're trusting in him. And against all odds, God can give you victory in that. And give you, help you have the victory in that. And so they gather there. The scene is set. And notice in verse 2, it says, and the Lord said to Gideon, the people who are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel claim glory for itself against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. Now look at what God is saying. First of all, he's saying, I can't let 32,000 go against 100,000. Because they're going to think they did it and get the glory. Now, what kind of pride has to be in the heart for 32,000 people to be against 100,000 and then brag afterwards if you win? You've got to recognize God is helping you. But God says, no, Israel's going to take pride in this. They're going to think they did this, and they're not the ones that did this. But what's amazing to me is God goes to Gideon and says, you know what? They've got 135,000. You've got 32,000. Gideon, you've got too many. I'd be, excuse me, you're breaking up, Lord. You're breaking up. Maybe call back. The cell service here is not working good, you know. No, Gideon, you've got too many. Why? Because I know the hearts of the people. They're going to think they did it. See, God knows the heart of man. And when God does amazing things in our life, we oftentimes want to take the glory for it and take the credit for it. But the bottom line is, God says, no man's going to get the glory. I'm going to get the glory, and I alone will get the glory. Now, you want to see this played out. Remember I mentioned the 1967 war in Israel and the 1973 war in Israel. In 1967, they called it the Six-Day War. 73 was the Yom Kippur War that happened on Yom Kippur, their holiest day of the year where everything shut down. But in the Six-Day War, they were tipped off that the enemies might be attacking them. So they were able to make somewhat of some preparations. They still were attacked from all sides. And Israel, even by some preemptive strikes down the Sinai and other things, they were able to have this amazing victory. And still it was very obvious that God intervened. And those who know the Lord very clearly could see God just intervened and used this tiny little nation to defeat all these gigantic nations with hundreds of millions of people all around them and gave them victory. And yet the Jews, what did they do? They start going, well, you were really bad. We're like the most awesome military on the planet. We're like amazing. And they got really prideful. They were really boasting and bragging about their great military. As a matter of fact, even today, kind of in jest, you go to Israel, they sell these shirts over there, and it shows a picture of a jet fighter on it, and it shows a picture of the Star of David and an American flag, and it says, don't worry, America, we're behind you. So they still kind of have that picture of our military so awesome, but something happened. They don't realize that it's God behind the military. But what's interesting about that and what's really neat, God saw their pride and God saw their arrogance, and their enemies gathered against them in 1973 in what is known as the Yom Kippur War. And this time, Israel was almost annihilated. They struck when they didn't expect it. They didn't have any forewarning. None of their intelligence had tipped them off that they were about to be attacked by all sides, by all the Arab nations again. And literally, they almost lost the battle. It was so bad at one point, the Golan Heights, which is in Israel's hands and a part of Israel, Syria and all the armies where Russia and Iran are now, they started moving on the Golan and coming down, the Syrians did, and there was one soldier up there with a tank waiting on the rest of the army to get there. They had one just kind of watching the post while everybody else was taking Yom Kippur off. And this guy jumps in the tank. He hears what's happening. He jumps in the tank, and literally he's going up on one side of the hill, shooting a mortar round, coming back down and talking to himself. Hey, we shot one off from over here, north side, north flank, boom, going to, now you guys from the other side. And he would drive over, come back up and shoot from the other side. And he's going up and down over this hill because you can't see. And they think there's this whole group of tanks over there shooting at them. So the entire Syrian army stops, and he holds off the entire Syrian army, one guy in one tank, until the rest of the Israeli army could get up there and defeat the Syrians on the Golan Heights. Guys, Israel knew at that moment, they said, we were almost defeated as a nation. We were almost destroyed as a country. And they sat down, and instead of talking about how great they were and how powerful their military were, they just got real quiet, real humble, and there were even little rumblings of God, God, God of Israel, God. I think maybe God intervened. And these are people that didn't believe it, that they didn't give. They're a secular nation. But they recognize this could not have happened without the intervention of God. God knows the human heart. He knows we want the glory. And he's saying, Gideon, if I don't do this, if I don't cut this army down, you guys are going to think you're great. You're going to think you did it. And I'm going to get the glory in this. He says, now, here's how we're going to thin them out. Look at this, verse 3. Now, therefore, proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and afraid, let him turn and depart at once from Mount Gilead. Now, I would think if you made that announcement, he's probably thinking, now, nobody's really going to leave. These guys are all soldiers. They're brave. And so Gideon gets the commands. All right, Lord, I'm going to make this command. And, of course, you told me there's too many, so I guess some will leave. And I'm sure there's some that are afraid. You know, it says in Deuteronomy 20, verse 8, God says that anyone that is afraid in battle should go home. Why? Because fear spreads to the other men around you. And if you're afraid and start to run, then they'll get afraid and run oftentimes. So he said, you know, if you guys are in battle afraid, let them go home. So Gideon gets up and says, all right, guys, Deuteronomy 28, if anybody's afraid, you guys go on home. And all of a sudden he sees, you know, the first guy, the second, then a little group, then another group, then 100, then 1,000. And all these people are getting up and leaving. And I tried to picture what it was like for Gideon. He's up there watching his army already down to nothing, 32,000 compared to 135,000. And they're starting to disappear in massive droves. And I'm thinking, if I was Gideon, it'd be like, cowards! You know, what's he doing? Just yellow, what are you doing? You know, but he's like, no. God, look what's happening. And I can just almost, the fear, the trembling, the Harod in Gideon's heart as God had them gathered there at the well of Harod, right? And he sees these guys just leaving and going in droves, and he's realizing, you know, now what? We had 20, look what it says at the end of the verse here, and it says, and 22,000 of the people returned and 10,000 remained. Two-thirds of his army just disappeared, and he already was way outnumbered. Now, Again, I don't know if Gideon was thinking about Deborah and Barak. He's probably maybe, well, Deborah and Barak, they were the time of the judges. I know that was an amazing battle. Everybody knew about in Israel. God, you took 10,000 people and you defeated all of our enemies there with Deborah and Barak. Maybe you're going to do the same kind of thing. All right, be encouraged. Be encouraged, Gideon. I know it's only 10,000, but be encouraged because God did it with Deborah and Barak and God can do it with us. And I just trust that God's going to do this, but it's about to get worse. And notice what happens. Look at verse four. But the Lord said to Gideon, the people are still too many. Wow. I wonder what Gideon's thinking at this moment. He says, bring them down to the water and I will test them there for you. Then it will be that of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you and the same shall go with you. And of whomever I say to you, this one shall not go with you, the same shall not go. So Gideon, there's still too many. We're going to dwindle your 10,000 down. And I wonder if Gideon's thinking, okay, what are we going to lose? Another 500, another 1,000? Lord, you know what we're going to need to do this battle. But here we go. And he says, sorry, guys. Again, they would have been thirsty. They were an army. There's not a lot of water in the Middle East. When you gather near a spring, you go to get all the water you can. And no doubt they were afraid to go down there because right across the valley were the Midianites. He says, guys, we're going to need water. He doesn't tell them that God's going to test them. He says, we're going to need water. Let's go down here to the well of Harod. We're going to gather around it. We're going to all get a drink and get ready for battle. And so the testing here has begun. And notice God said, take them down to the water. And there it will be that I will test them. The Lord says he will test them down at the water. They're in verse 4. And again, to test here is very interesting. The word means to test, yes. But it also means to refine as by fire with a silversmith. You know, goldsmith and silversmiths, my understanding is what they do, they put the material in there that's dug out of the earth and they heat it up. And when you heat that up, all the junk that doesn't belong in the pure silver or the pure gold will float to the top and they skim it off. And God is now about to heat these guys up to find out what they're really made of. Because they're going to be going close to the enemy's camp, getting a drink of water, and God wants to watch their response when the pressure comes in. How are they going to respond in this situation? You know, it's interesting. We never really know how we're going to respond until the pressure comes into our life. You take that tea bag, and when you empty up all these different boxes of tea and take all the different tea bags out, I got a daughter who loves to drink, you know, tea. And she's got all these different tea bags, right? But if they come out of the box, you don't know which one it is. If it's not labeled well, it just looks like all the other, you know, tea. And yet when you take that tea and you put it down in hot water, immediately you begin to learn what it is. Because when it's heated up, that's when its essence begins to be released. And guys, we as believers, God allows the heating up in our life and he allows us to drop down in that heat. And he says, all right, I know what's in there. I already know what flavor it is. I've read the box. I made the box. I want you to know. And then all of a sudden it comes out. I'm telling you something. A lot of times, and I've had God put the heated situation around my life, I don't like the fragrance that comes out. I don't like the flavor that's revealed. Sometimes it's embarrassing. And most of the time for me, at this point, it's humiliating. And I go before the Lord and I say, God, thank you that you didn't show that in front of everybody. But why am I still like this? When am I really going to grow up? Why is there so much in my life? I'm a pastor for crying out loud. When's this going to change? And God says, I'm changing you, but I want you to see it because as God reveals it, that's when we go to God in prayer and say, God, please change my flavor. You know, whatever the case might be, I want to be someone, Lord, that brings you glory. And God says, I'm going to refine you and I'm going to refine them. I'm going to test them and find out what's really going on in their hearts. And here's the key. God, we're going to see, is going to test them in everyday normal life activities while the heat's on. That is, they're going to get a drink of water. Listen, all of us need a drink of water. But when we're living normal everyday life activities and God allows the heat to be turned up in our life, how do we respond? I can tell you, not only does God want us to see how we're going to respond, but he wants us to know the world around us is watching us. And that's the greatest thing that puts the heaviest weight on me, especially as a pastor. People watch pastors more closely. I'm made of the same stuff you guys are. And so when I see my failures, when the heat comes in, and I realize, God, people are watching me, you know, this is a refining process. It causes me to run to God in desperation and say, not for my sake. I can be humiliated. One day I'll die. But for your name's sake, please let me handle this right. For your name's sake. Because what are people going to say about you because of how I respond? And so we don't need to be overwhelmed by that, but we need to recognize it and go to God and say, God, I need you to be the one that's going to give me the strength to pass this test in just normal life activities. It's interesting. It's been said a faith that can't be tested is a faith that can't be trusted. And this is a faith now that had to be tested in just normal everyday activities. Now, why does God test our faith? A couple of reasons. One is to show us if our faith is real or not. You know, if it's not tested, you don't know whether it's real. You can say you have faith, but what happens when you really have to have it? And the number two, secondly, is to grow us so we can see God's faithfulness in the midst of the test. And again, notice what I said here. God is going to be testing them in normal activities in their life. Look what happens in verse 5. So he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, everyone who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set apart by himself. And likewise, everyone who gets down on his knees to drink, you shall set by himself. Here's the bottom line. You look at them, those who bend down, get the water in their hands, and they drink this way, put them over here, one side or another, we don't know which side. Those who put their face completely down in the water, they get on all fours, they put their head down to drink straight out of the water with their mouth. They bury their head in the water. He said, those that do that, you put another place. Now, it's neat to me because I was thinking, God, how could he do this? How could Gideon, one guy, do this with 10,000 people as they're coming in groups of hundreds, one after another, down to get water at the well of Harod? I've seen the well of Harod. I've been there 10 different times. And that's very helpful because it's this stream that runs a long way down through there. It ends up today over into a swimming pool because there's a kibbutz that made a pool out of it. But it's this long stream where they could have easily gathered hundreds of men on both sides. And I was thinking, God, how could he see the ones that were raised up and the ones that were raised down and properly divide them? Because as I picture that stream in my mind, if everyone came to it, and the majority of them did, 9,700 out of the 10,000 did this, if they go completely down to the water with their face to the water, you would easily see those that are raised up above them drinking out of their hands. So he would have just said, you, get over there. You over there. The rest of you guys over there. Why? Just do it. Next group, come in. You. And you can easily see the ones that had their heads raised up. So God is showing him. He's dividing these guys out so they can he can put his armies together. And again, although there's different viewpoints on why God did this particular test, I believe God was separating those who stayed alert and watchful for the battle when the army was near as compared to those who just buried their face in their necessities. Now, what do I mean by that? Guys, what a picture this is for us that God is giving. Don't lose this. Listen, some of you guys have your face so buried in the necessities of life, and they're necessities. You need a job. You've got to earn money. You've got to pay your bills. You got to take care of your wife and kids. You've got to take care of all these things, but your face is so buried in the necessities of life, you're not even aware of the battle that's going on around you, and you're not ready for the battle. How many times have I heard people say, Pastor, I'd love to be more involved, but you know the job right now, things are really busy. This is a person who has their face all the way down in the water, and they're so buried in the essential necessities of life that they're not ready for battle, nor can even God call on them for battle. Listen, you want to be ready for battle? You want God to call on you for battle? You're going to need water. You're going to have a job. You're going to have to pay for your family. You're going to have to be responsible, but you also need to be alert. You need to be not so buried, your head so buried in the necessities of life that you're not looking around going, God, what's happening? What's the enemy doing in America? What's the enemy doing in my church? What's the enemy doing in my family? God, how do I fight this? Lord, show me how to pray. Lord, I want to be used. Where do you want me to be used, Lord? That's a person who has the water up to their mouth and they're looking around ready for the battle. And listen, don't find yourself, especially in the days we live in, with your head buried in the necessities. I know they're necessary, but you're never going to be used. Now, can your head be buried in the necessities and you still go to heaven? Absolutely. You don't lose your salvation. You're not going to not go to heaven because you're buried in the necessities and you're not available for God. But that's the key. You're not going to be used by God either because he can't. He's looking down that row on both sides saying, whose head is up? Who's being alert? Who's watching in prayer? Who's watching in the word? Who's ready for battle? Those are the guys I'm going to choose, and they're the ones I'm going to use. Guys, do you want to be one of those that God uses in battle? It's time to lift up our head today. I realize the responsibilities. They have to be there. But I think we need to make sure that we have our priorities in proper order so that God can use us. And notice verse 6, and the number of those who lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, was 300 men. That's about right. The Bible says that the labor, the work is great, but the laborers are few. How many would really honestly say, you know what? I am in the word and prayer. My head is up. I could be used by God. But how many of us would honestly say in our heart right now, really? I probably have my head buried in the water. I'm just trying to provide for my family, trying to do good with my family, trying to have the job going well, trying to, you know, maybe even buried in hobbies, which there's nothing wrong in hobbies. If God was to look in this room right now and say, all right, Mark, you know, look at this room, and including Mark, you know, look at me, look at all of us, somebody else judging from the outside, and saying, how many of us have our head down where we can't be used, and how many of us have our head up? And God says, him, her, those, okay, the rest of them over here. You know, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy that never had time to be used by God because I was so buried in these things. And again, now we see these guys here, and he says, there's 300 of them. The number of those who lapped, put in their hand or their mouth was 300 men, but all the rest of the people got down on their knees to drink water, so they buried themselves. And then the Lord said to Gideon, by the 300 men who lapped, I will save you, and I will deliver the Midianites into your hand. Let all the other people go, every man to his place. Again, how hard and possibly frightening that must have been, yet Gideon was learning to trust the Lord no matter the circumstances and no matter the odds. And notice verse 8. So the people took provisions and their trumpets in their hands, and he sent away all the rest of Israel, every man to his tent, and retained those 300 men, and the camp of Midian was below in the valley. But notice this. Listen what he says. They took their provisions, they took their trumpets in their hands. He sends everyone away, and he gathers his 300 together and says, all right, you're the 300. We're going to fight this 135,000, and here's your weapon, a trumpet, and we're going to see a clay pot with a candle in the middle of it. Can you imagine going, you're sure God called you? This is your battle plan? Guys, listen, we are clay pots. And all we need to do is sound the truth of Jesus Christ, let ourselves be broken and hold his light, and we will defeat the enemy. It's God doing the work anyway, it's not us. And I love what it says at the end of verse 8, and the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. See, this is what's sweet about this, because no matter what the odds are and no matter what's happening, the bottom line is that if we will do what God asks us to do, then God will make sure that we are on the mountaintop and our enemies will remain in the valley where they will be defeated. Guys, I want to finish with this. And if the worship team wants to come on up, you guys can come on up, and because I know we're about out of time and all, but you guys can be making your way up here. But notice this. First of all, you need to obey the Lord at all costs, regardless of your fears. Obey the Lord at all costs, regardless of your fears. That's what Gideon did. Secondly, Gideon rose early to seek the Lord in humility and fear because he knew he needed to be empowered by God and he needed his marching orders and the full armor of God. The next thing, what did he do? He moved forward regardless of the odds that were against him, what God called him to do. And lastly, he surrounded himself with men who weren't buried in the necessities of life, but were dealing with the necessities of life, but keeping their head up so they could clearly see the battle that awaited and what God wanted them to do. Guys, if we do these things, we're going to see God use us and we're going to have victory in our life. You need to have victory and you need to be encouraged that God will give it. Guys, be a Gideon. God will give you the victory. God will give you the ability, but you just need to be broken and you need to shine your light and trust him. I don't care how crazy it looks. I don't care how crazy the odds look. God will give you the victory.
Thank you for joining us today in this interesting passage of Judges. Here on Come to the Table, Pastor Mark Kirk is working his way through this Old Testament book. And there are lessons for us to learn from these people who lived during that time. Samson is one of the last judges mentioned in this book. And he had quite a tale. He was meant to live as a Nazarite, committing himself to the Lord and the Lord's things. But he had a straying eye that led him straight to all the wrong women. He was drawn toward Philistine women who tricked him more than once and ultimately led to his downfall. But did you know that God mentioned Samson in the book of Hebrews when he refers to many people who had great faith? When you think of the faith heroes of the Bible, Samson is probably not going to make your short list, right? But in God's eyes, he sees things differently. That should be an encouragement for you today, as you may not see yourself as anything, but God sees you differently and uniquely. He recognizes strengths in you that you may not even be able to observe from your perspective. Keep these things in mind today as you go about the day. Whether you feel purposeful in what you're doing or if you're wondering what in the world God is doing, He's there with you and He is for you, excited to see your faith lived out. That's all for today's teaching, but we invite you to go to thewaymedia.net, where you can be directed to our church's service times. Just click on the Calvary Knoxville link. Once more, our website is thewaymedia.net. We look forward to you joining us again for Come to the Table. Come to the Table is a radio outreach ministry of Calvary Knoxville.